the day before the drama in the House. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Well, they'll vote for House Speaker. Kevin McCarthy wants the job to lead the new Republican majority, but...
I would judge him by what he did as minority leader, and there's nothing he's done to earn my vote.
Congressman Bob Good is among a handful of GOP members who say they will never vote for McCarthy.
In order to win, Kevin McCarthy needs a majority of all House members voting for someone by name. Most Republicans are on board, and his supporters are not budget.
So if there's a standoff tomorrow, the voting keeps going, and no House business can happen. New members can't even be sworn in.
The House is required to keep voting round after round until it elects a speaker. If this lasts until the 13th, some staff may not even get paid.
Fox's Chad Pergram at the Capitol. The heavy rain that drenched Northern California has left some areas flooded.
I would say that this is the worst flood that we have seen here, and we have flooded before.
She is in Oakland. South of Sacramento, two rivers. Levees were breached. Some people needed to be rescued with cars submerged. One person was found dead in a vehicle, and people in one low-lying community were told to evacuate. Amid the ongoing Russian barrage on Ukraine, knocking out water and power service for civilians, a counterattack. Russia claims 63 of its soldiers were killed in a Ukrainian rocket strike in the Donetsk region. Ukraine has said hundreds of Russian soldiers died. Syria claims it was attacked by Israel.
The Syrian army says two soldiers were killed and two others wounded in the attack. The second in 7 months to cause Damascus International Airport to shut down. Israel has in the past targeted airports and ports in government-held parts of Syria. These are apparent attempts to prevent arms shipments from Iran reaching militants.
That's Fox's Jonathan Savage at the Vatican. Thousands paying their last respects to Pope Emeritus Benedict, who died at age 95 and will lie in state until his Thursday funeral. America's listening to Fox News.
If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know my brain is constantly running about 1,000 miles an hour, and sometimes I have a hard time turning things off to go to sleep. Do you experience the same thing? Have you found anything that'll help you but doesn't make you feel groggy in the morning? Because I haven't. Most of the time, you may sleep more, but you're not as sharp as you would if you could just sleep, right? That's how I used to feel until the people at Relief Factor introduced me to a new product about 6 months ago. It's called Relief Factor Sleep. It's 100% drug-free. It's a blend of natural ingredients. It's designed to promote healthy sleep by reducing anxiety and stress, improving mood, and promoting relaxation. I have to tell you, I took this the first night, and I was asleep within 10 minutes. I fall asleep so fast now. I have a bottle of it on my nightstand every night. First bottle is $19.95, so unleash the power of great sleep by calling 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or go to relieffactor.com. Dream big and...
Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Here's the news in 60 seconds from YumaDailyNews.com. Arizona Congressman Greg Stanton and Ruben Gallego have been wanting answers from the CEO of Southwest Airlines. They want an explanation for why Southwest has canceled thousands of flights since a great winter storm swept across the country. Stanton wants Southwest CEO to testify before the committee, laying out what steps Southwest will take to prevent something like this from happening again. MedJewel Day Festival has been scheduled to return to Yuma this week. Officials for the event say there will be live concerts, community performances, and a kid zone. The city of Yuma has been reminding the community that unwanted Christmas trees can still be dropped off and free of charge. City officials say the trees must be clear of ornaments and lights. Yuma's Most Wanted has been updated this morning to the website. Take a look at the latest lineup that Yuma PD wants to see behind bars sooner than later. See if you might know them. Three new laws have been going into effect in Arizona. Minimum wage will be going up to $13.85. Income tax has been switched to a flat rate of 2.5%. And if someone is convicted of a crime, they can seal their record. For the latest local and state stories, go to YumaDailyNews.com. I'm Kendra White.
Hi, I'm Eva Adiva. If you're a cancer patient in the U.S. and its territories or Canada, you may be able to help uncover the next breakthrough by sharing your patient data and unique experience with researchers around the world.
My unique experience can make the difference of life and death to people in my community.
It is in our stories and data that the answers can be found.
I am proud to be a part of that group.
Join Stand Up to Cancer, Count Me In, and thousands of patients in this movement at standuptocancer.org/countmein.
I lived alone and was having problems with my landlord. He's a creep. One night I'm watching TV and I hear my landlord letting himself in.
Hey, get out. You can't keep coming in.
I'm just here to fix your fridge and spend some time together.
Get out. I'm reporting you.
Don't make a federal case.
A federal case?
Sexual harassment in housing is against federal law. If you are harassed, file a complaint with HUD. Go to hud.gov/fairhousing. If you fear for your safety, call 911. Fair Housing, the law is on your side. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Hi, I'm Patti LaBelle. Now, cooking is all about time. Like when it's time to add some salt, time to add some oregano, and when it's time to take it off the burner. Since we're all getting a little older, it's time to get screened for cancer. It can save your life, and it's easier than ever. We'll help you find a screening location that works for you at timetoscreen.org. It's just like cooking, honey. When it's time, it's time. Just call 1-855-53-SCREEN.
Brought to you by Cancer Care with the Community Oncology Alliance.
Remember 20 years ago, we woke up to a clear blue sky on what became one of our darkest days. Remember a national tragedy created national unity. Remember unbearable pain led to unbreakable strength.
We will never break.
Remember the hope, resilience, and unity that brought us together after 9/11. Make sure these lessons live on for a new generation at neverforget.org.
The following program on 560 KVLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KVLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KVLU, El Dorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU, and Happy New Year. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. I'm in the studio today with Sean Garner, my partner, and we've got Cody Deason, who's turning dials and pushing buttons and stuff, trying to make us sound as good as he can. We hope that you had a great Christmas. Those that celebrate Christmas, we hope that you had a great New Year and that everything went well, that you didn't blow off any of your digits. That's what I was personally worried about. That's why I always light firecrackers with my left hand, because I'm right-handed. So we hope you had a great time, and hopefully this 2023 will be a great year for you. Sean and I have been discussing over the last few weeks some theories that have come to us, and primarily my take on this was my concern about government funding. Basically, it's almost tax season, you know, it's coming again, right down the pipe, new year, new tax season, and I'm always reluctant to pay taxes for the purpose of funding government programs that I don't necessarily agree with. And we know that just about 2 weeks ago, the federal government, before they took a break, they passed an omnibus bill that they spent over, you know, trillions of dollars for protecting endangered fish and stuff in California, and all sorts of goodies that were baked into that. My understanding was it was a 700, no, maybe even more. I think it was double that, like 1,400-page legislation. And they had about a day or so to go through it before they actually passed it. So my guess is that not very many people read it, at least the senators that passed it. And so now we're stuck with all these programs that you and I probably don't even agree with. And we are still mandated to pay our taxes, and we don't have... We can't say, no, I'm not going to pay taxes, but they can say, well, we're going to use all the money that we get into the coffers for anything we want, and we're going to use it for these programs that you don't necessarily agree with. So it's a difficult thing when I pay my taxes, knowing that a lot of that's going to go to programs that I don't necessarily believe in. And having set the groundwork for that, Sean, you've been really into this carbon dioxide pollution issue for quite some time now, and a lot of the information I get about it is from you, and then I go and I look at the resources that you've been sharing with me, and I think the common misconception, I don't know if it's a misconception, I don't know, we really don't know the science. I mean, when I hear a scientist say, scientists, or I hear out there there's global warming, I always take it with a grain of salt, just like I did when we found out about the COVID-19 stuff. You know, it's like, oh, well, we're the government, so we know. We know better than you, and you have to get vaccinated or else you'll die. Or you have to quarantine or else you'll die. And the whole time, it just didn't feel right. And now, a lot of, looking back, you know, 2 years ago, now we're starting to see, wow, a lot of that was unfounded science, and it was really paranoia that drove a lot of that we had to endure. And unfortunately, a lot of people died, and a lot of people got hurt, and a lot of our freedoms were taken away. So I'm always, when the government tells me something scientifically, I always take it with a grain of salt, because really, the field of science is one that's always changing. And there's always, the purpose of the scientific field is the scientific method to arrive and test theories that have been promulgated before. We're always testing those theories and refining them or completely upending them, because now new knowledge has come to light because of the technological advances we made in science. And so what we once knew 100 years ago might be completely different because of the technological advances we've made. So when the government says something like we have to reduce carbon emissions by a certain year or date, then I'm going to dig in my heels a little bit, because I don't trust the government science. I really don't. Maybe I'm just a conspiracy theorist, but I don't trust their science, because I think they have an agenda. Unfortunately, they shouldn't. It's the government. They shouldn't think. They shouldn't have any type of agenda or anything like that. But unfortunately, it does. And that agenda doesn't usually jive with my family and my values. And therefore, I'm going to dig in a little bit and give a little bit of resistance. Not enough to go to jail, but enough to question before I just fall lockstep in line.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. In fact, most people, if you think just a dollar and cents perspective, do you think that your money is going to be better spent through your decisions and your autonomy, or is it going to be better spent by giving it to the government because they know more and have more access to research and to the professionals out there that understand everything to use money that's going to be better for society? I think most of us understand, regardless of what resources the government has, every dollar that we give to the government, 90% of it's going to be wasted. And if we get 10 cents back on the dollar as far as actual services and products like roads and infrastructure, then we count ourselves lucky. So we know that the government is notorious for wasting resources when it comes to money. Why would it be any different when it comes to information? And so think for yourself. The information that we can gather by ourselves and that we can communicate when we have free speech and we're not censored, whether it's on a social network or internet or emails or any other platform, then we can get better ideas out there and we can innovate and accomplish more than any government can do. And I think it's merely because the government is a very small population of people. And when you focus that much power and that much authority into a very select small group of people, you're not going to get good ideas. You're going to waste the millions of other ideas that are out there that could be contributing to the innovation and the problem solving component of that. So when we get back to the carbon question, the question is this. I guess it's a three-part question. Number one, is the Earth warming? Number two, is it caused by mankind? Is it caused by man-made activities? Number three, can we legitimately do something about it to reverse it or stop it? And so, if you answer the first question, is the Earth warming? You just look back in history, and even that, it's difficult. There are different studies that say different things, but since the 1800s, there is fairly stable consensus that the Earth is warming and has warmed somewhere between 1.5 to 3 degrees in the past 200 years. So yes, the Earth is warming. Number two, did we cause that? Is it caused by the burning of fossil fuels? the Industrial Revolution, burning of coal and burning of oil and burning of gas and natural gases. That is apparently settled science for a lot of liberals and left-leaning individuals. Conservatives, if you dare to step out on that argument, you're going to get punished. And it's kind of like denying an election these days. If you deny an election or question the results or the protocols that were involved in an election, then you're going to be called a conspiracy theorist and a wacko, and anything you say after that point is going to be discredited. So even if you have good factual evidence for your argument, it doesn't matter. You're going to be called an election denier. And right now the term that's being coined is a climate denier. And it doesn't matter if you are agreeing that the climate is warming. If you don't agree with all the premises that it's mankind that is creating the warming and it's mankind that can actually reduce or eliminate the warming, then you're a climate denier. And so anything that you say, any argument you put forth, is going to be discredited. And I think that's a major problem. There's a lot of evidence out there that the Earth is warming and has warmed many, many times throughout its history, throughout the billions of years that it's been around. And it did that without mankind participating. And that the warming trend actually began to occur and continued, and that the warming trend is actually ahead of the carbon dioxide that is put into the atmosphere, which is the greenhouse gas. So when we're talking about what comes out of your exhaust pipe, there's a lot of things that can come out of your exhaust pipe. There's carbon monoxide, which is poisonous. You know, some people that want to kill themselves just shut themselves in the garage and turn on the car, and they're not suffocating from carbon dioxide. They're being poisoned by carbon monoxide. And that's not the greenhouse gas that the environmentalists are concerned about. It's poisonous gas, and we don't want to have a ton of it out there, but it's actually, I believe it's less than 1% of the composition of gases that come out of your exhaust pipe. What comes out is CO2, which is about 20%, and then there's about 20% that's actually just steam, and so it's water vapor coming out of your exhaust pipe. So it's CO2 that is the greenhouse gas that's coming out of your exhaust pipe. And what is a greenhouse gas? Well, what it does is it allows the sun light and the warmth from the sun to come in, but it doesn't actually allow it to escape. So it blocks heat from escaping back out into the atmosphere, and so then it creates a warming effect. So there you go, greenhouse gas. Now, I want to take it one step back. When you think of the word alone, greenhouse, what comes to mind? Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing?
For a good thing, right?
Right. For nature, for plants, for growing. A greenhouse, the purpose of a greenhouse is to produce a mini little atmosphere where plants can thrive. Now, greenhouse owners typically buy carbon dioxide. They buy it in canisters. And it's because plants obviously they breathe in carbon dioxide. That's what they use to, along with sunlight, to create sugars that is necessary for them to have the food for their growth. And the optimal level of carbon dioxide for them to have starts at 1,000 parts per million. Now, what we have in the atmosphere right now is about 400 parts per million, so we're actually suboptimal. And so a greenhouse will actually haul in carbon dioxide and put more of it into their little artificial atmospheres to create a good environment for plants to grow. So if we're pumping it into the atmosphere and in general providing more of this gas that is friendly to plants, then why is that a bad thing? And the argument is, well, it's because it's warming the whole Earth so much that the polar ice caps are going to melt. Okay, well, why is that a bad thing? Why? I know polar bears was really the picture that captured most people's minds and emotions on the cover of Time magazine. This is what global warming looks like, and it's a starving polar bear. And the decline in the population of polar bears. But in reality, polar bears are actually thriving right now. What was happening was people were going up and hunting polar bears and using them for rugs. And so there were put some regulations and restrictions on the hunting of polar bears, and so their numbers have began to thrive now. So it wasn't the melting of the polar ice caps. But that never came out in the news, that they were wrong, that it was the melting of the ice caps that was killing off the polar bears. So what is it that's bad about the melting of the ice caps and these icebergs around the world that is so bad? And it almost sounds blasphemous for me to ask that question. Everybody knows it's bad. Of course it's bad. We can't let the ice melt. Okay, fine. Crucify me later. For now, let's just have a discussion. Why? Why is it bad? Why is it bad to have the sea level rise a little bit more? Why is it bad to be a little bit warmer? Do more people die from being too hot or being too cold? And statistically, 100 times more people die from cold than they do of heat. Plants like heat. If we had an extended winter, we'd have a shorter growing period. We'd have less crops. In fact, we're able to grow crops year-round here in Yuma because we're a very warm climate. And so the world round, if we were a bit warmer, we could actually grow more crops. If we had more carbon dioxide in the air, the plants would actually be more efficient. The pores that plants breathe out of, they have to open up wider in order to allow in carbon dioxide. And so the more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the wider those pores have to be. And when the pores are opened up wider, then they actually lose the water. And so they become more drought resistant if there's more carbon dioxide in the air. So we can actually give them less water and produce more drought resistant, hardier, healthier crops if we actually provide them with carbon dioxide. We have to take a break. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
We've got some sunshine. The temperature's a little bit cooler today, but most of the week, right on track for the first part of January. Nice, quiet stretch of weather for us. Turning out sunny today, 64 the high this afternoon. Low 50s overnight. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, 66 the high. Wednesday, slightly warmer, 68. Thursday, dry, 69 Thursday. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
School the World is a community-driven nonprofit committed to fighting extreme poverty at its core in areas of Guatemala, Honduras, and Panama through the power of education. School the World works in poverty-stricken communities with little to no access to education to build schools, playgrounds, stock classrooms, educate students, and empower parents to be their child's first educators. Domestic opportunities for students, families, and companies to create change are also available. Please visit schooltheworld.org for more information or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You've heard it said, he's a diamond in the rough. Or maybe, diamonds are forever. Here's something else I've learned about diamonds. They're just pieces of coal put under pressure for a long, long, long time. So, when I start feeling like I want to give up, I think about that little piece of coal. And if that piece of coal can make something of itself by not giving up, so can I. Persistence is genius. From PassItOn.com.
News Talk 560 KBLU, where Yuma comes to talk.
560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson, and I'm in studio with my partner, Adam Hanson, and we're talking about common sense solutions and who is in the best position to develop systems to provide the actual solution to correct the problems, the government or the individuals, the people in general. And my argument is anything that goes to the government, if we get a 10% return on our dollar or 10% in turn on whatever we invest, whether it's, you know, knowledge or resources in general, then we're lucky. And 10% is not a good return. Anybody that's running a household or a business or anything else knows you're going to go bankrupt very quickly when you rely on that return. You need more than you put in back. And the government doesn't produce anything. So it only is there, it should be only be there to protect our rights. But it seems to be there to be the omnipotent source of knowledge of all that is good and healthy for us. And we have to rely on it in determining whether or not to introduce vaccinations that have just been produced to stave off these, whether it's COVID or any other pandemic that comes along. And I think that we're running down a very dangerous path, that we rely way too much on the government and give them too much credit for the solutions that they come up with, and we need to rely more on free dialogue and solutions that we can come up with on our own. And so the question is, with climate change, because it's not global warming anymore, they don't call it global warming. I'm not sure why we have to keep changing the term here, but now it's called climate change. And if we continue to produce CO2 into the atmosphere, then we're going to go down this path where we're going to sow the seeds of our destruction. We're going to create our own Armageddon. And I'm doubtful about the statistics that the government is putting out about that, or at least that the mainstream media is sponsoring so heavily about that. And it seems that there is a narrative that is supported, and they're only looking and they're cherry-picking evidence to support that narrative rather than looking at all of the questions and all of the potential solutions. So when I talk to you, Adam, and then I say, hey, what if CO2 wasn't actually a bad thing? What if we got it wrong, that it's not warming the earth out of control, that it is not going to be the element that causes human extinction and extinction of life as we know it on earth? What if it's actually fine to have more CO2 in the atmosphere? Just posing that question in and of itself, what comes to mind for you, both on the social aspect and you personally?
Well, yeah, I would be concerned about saying that out loud, number one, because of the wrath that I would receive, so I probably wouldn't say that publicly, number one, even if I did believe it. Number two, my understanding as a layperson in this conversation, carbon is bad, and that, you know, CO2 is the devil. And it's going to be our downfall. It will kill everything in its path. That's my that's off the cuff, you know, what I've been made to believe through whatever is promulgated in the media or in resources. I've done very little research here. I've looked at the resources you've given me, but prior to that, I'm saying I've done very little research. I can find one YouTube video that says that there is climate change or global warming. I can find another video that will say the direct opposite. And they use different facts and terms, and by the end of both videos, I'm like, well, I don't know what to believe now, because they're so convincing in both those arguments. I don't know if those are true facts or not. I just don't know. But because it's so overwhelming, the information that we're given one side, I would say lopsidedly, we are to believe that CO2 is bad, so much so that our government dollars are going to funding omnibus bills to the tune of trillions of dollars that we don't have, of our tax money being used on curbing global warming or climate change factors that we've been told are factors by the government. So, for example, in California, they were supposed to be carbon-free, let's say, producing no carbon by, what was it, 2030 or 20?
Yeah, 2030.
Some ridiculous number, and so I think their goal there was, oh, we're going to use solar power.
So carbon neutral, so they absorb at least as much carbon as they produce.
And so they went on a manhunt, or a headhunt, and they took out their nuclear plants. They shut down their nuclear plants. They shut down all sorts of different energy creation mechanisms that were producing energy for them, and the goal to be carbon neutral by 2030 or 35, I can't remember the actual year, And they quickly had to reverse that once they figured out, oh my gosh, solar is not going to be able to power California. And so that was a big misstep. They still haven't really corrected, and they're still in jeopardy. But we saw the same thing in Germany, Sean, a few years ago when they said, we're going to be, you know, producing less carbon. We're going to go all solar here. They put all their energy and their funding and their power into solar. And I'm not knocking solar. Solar is a great technology, but it does not produce enough energy on the whole that our society really runs on. So either we have to change our lifestyle in such a way that we do not need as much power as we're currently consuming, or we've got to look to other alternatives other than solar alone. And so now you throw in wind. And wind, once you start going these other alternative routes, which I'm not disagreeing, they work in some instances, but they don't produce enough power like a coal plant does, or definitely not as much as a nuclear plant does. I mean, we've got Palo Verde plant here outside of the Phoenix Valley in Palo Verde, and that produces power for California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. We're shipping power all over the place from that one nuclear plant. And it's not even that big. I mean, I've been there several times. My grandfather used to work there. He was a journeyman welder. And so he took me around as a teenager, and I would go visit him out there at the plant. And he had a ton of fifth wheels and a ton of RVs because there's just a lot of people living out there from time to time doing things like he did, which was you travel from plant to plant and do different welds. He was a welder, so he did certain projects. And as you walk me around, I mean, the facilities, they're big. The reactors are big, but they're not that big. I mean, it's not a big compound. To think that is producing enough energy for multiple states is pretty awesome.
Compared to like what a coal plant would be doing, or a geothermal or something like that, be a much bigger footprint.
Where I grew up in southern Arizona, and it's still there today, it's still producing power. We're on a coal plant. I mean, you can see it had several stacks. It has several stacks. I should speak in the present tense, because I remember growing up, I knew that's where my power came from. You could see it off in the distance, the smokestacks. There was always something coming out. I don't know if they're smokestacks or steam. I don't know what's coming out of them. It didn't look like smoke. It looked more like steam. So I don't know what comes out of it, but you could see it. There's, you know, three or four of those.
Yeah, it's steam. It's 100% steam.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing, because the only thing that feeds it, that goes into it, is water. That's what, you know, is turned into steam. It turns the turbine. You've got the uranium rods that produces the reaction that creates the heat, and then steam is the byproduct. So the footprint that is created by a nuclear plant is, majority of it is the construction of the plant itself. When you put all the cement together, then that's mining that is required to construct that cement, and all the steel that goes into it, and all the wiring that is components of it, and then you got the computer and the electronic components of it there. But when you look at the carbon footprint of a nuclear plant compared to a coal or gas, the construction of it is nearly all of its footprint, whereas the coal or gas, it's the actual consumption of the fuel itself. So Michael Schellenberger is a fantastic
resource.
He not only a resource, but a champion for nuclear energy, because he was a prominent member of Greenpeace. He is an environmentalist. He continues to be an environmentalist, but the thing is, he went off the narrative of most environmentalists, and so then he's been essentially disavowed by that branch of society. And he says that the footprint that we leave if we use nuclear energy for all of our energy needs is a Coke can for an entire lifetime of an individual living at the standards of an individual in the United States. And you think, how much gasoline did you use individually over Christmas break, right? I probably used 100 gallons of gas. I mean, we went. My family went to Hawaii. It's the first time we've been there. And the amount of jet fuel, it shows on your ticket the carbon footprint that you're leaving just by traveling over to Hawaii. And so that's a lot of jet fuel individually that we use just to get to Hawaii, even if we sat around and did nothing and didn't drive and consume any other gas. But the point is, the amount of gasoline that we're burning individually on a daily basis is immense. And whether that's good or bad is another issue, another question. But the carbon footprint, or the overall footprint for nuclear, is a Coke can per individual, and it's very easy to contain. And it all has been contained. We've actually had no incidences of nuclear waste spillage. We've actually contained it all throughout the late 1960s was the first nuclear plant, 1970s is when it was commissioned, until today. All of the disasters, if you want to call them that, regarding nuclear energy have been with the production of the energy and essentially the mismanagement of that production. So if that was your question, what's coming out of those smokestacks? It's steam. You could put your face over that and probably get a good facial.
No thanks.
Okay.
But, getting back to the nuclear issue, so why, and this is a question we've been asking for months now, you know, as we've talked, you and I have had these discussions, and even on this show, we've talked about nuclear being a great clean alternative, and I scratch my head as to why aren't we pursuing that more? Why isn't the government pushing that? If they truly want to be carbon neutral or carbon efficient, let's say, by a certain year, it seems to me like nuclear is the way to do that because of the technological advances, the ability to produce so much power with so little. So what's the downside of nuclear? As you were speaking, the first thought that came to mind is, well, if this is the new normal, if we're going to go to nuclear as our clean energy source, for us it doesn't look that bad here in the United States, but when you start using in Iran or Syria, for example, and they're going to copy our nuclear model and try and power their countries with nuclear, in order to do that, they're going to have uranium. And so uranium is going to be the catalyst to nuclear war. You know, that's the bad thing about uranium is that it can be used for big bombs, and that those bombs can do incredible damage. Do you think, Sean, that's why we don't push that, or is it because of a misunderstanding of nuclear or a... ignorance to the fact that really it's a safe technology when done right, or we just have this Chernobyl mindset that, oh man, nuclear, it's bad. It's going to blow up and kill us all.
I think both those. I think that, number one, the more nuclear plants we have, the more potential we have for nuclear accidents, and I think the media has done a wonderful job of scaring the public to thinking that that's reality. And number two, that if we're using nuclear products to create energy like enriched uranium or plutonium, then the byproducts of that could be used as weapons. And the reality is quite the opposite. Nuclear, as far as the safety record goes, is so much safer than coal. It's so much safer than gas or natural gas. It's even safer than windmills. More people have died maintaining windmills than have died maintaining nuclear plants for the past 50 years. And that is quite a statistic, because windmills, number one, don't produce very much electricity, and number two, haven't been around that long, and are looked at as basically the symbol of clean energy and safety, but they kill a lot of birds.
Yeah, and I was going to say environmentally. I mean, environmentalists should be having a heyday, you know, because of the amount of birds that are killed by those windmills.
They have a huge footprint. It takes a lot to make them. It takes a lot of fiberglass to make them. They're very tall, and when you have to go to maintain them, more people have fallen to their death maintaining windmills than have ever died maintaining a nuclear power plant. So in Chernobyl, the numbers are sketchy at best because, you know, Soviet Union, when Chernobyl blew up, Chernobyl was the only true actual explosion that occurred from a nuclear power plant. And when you look in it and do the actual research, it turns out that they managed it so horribly that there could have been 100 different safety measures put in that would have avoided what occurred there. And so it's kind of like saying, well, somebody, you know, died in a car accident, and when it was hit, the car blew up in flames, and it was a poor design, so we should never travel by car anymore. Well, perhaps we should design the car better, and that's what we've done. And in fact, more people die, 40,000 Americans die every year in traffic accidents, but we're not going to put that on the table for arguing whether or not we're going to reduce travel. We want to travel. We want to get to work. We want to get to our families. We want to get to our vacation spots. And if we simply st- stopped traveling, then we could reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that goes in the air, and we could also reduce the amount of deaths that occur each year. And so from the nuclear standpoint, if we're talking about safety, it's so much safer than even traveling to work on a daily basis, and it's so much safer than any other alternative in that we have for energy, even solar panels. How many people have died with solar panels? Well, more have died being electrocuted through the installation, through falling off of roofs, installing solar panels. And you think I'm making these numbers up, but if you really look at the actual numbers, it's somewhere between 30 and 50 people actually died in the Chernobyl accident, from the actual accident itself. Now, other people say that, no, it's in the thousands because of the cancer, the thyroid cancer that resulted from the radiation that was spewed out from Chernobyl. And thyroid cancer is very treatable. And, well, just because it's treatable doesn't mean that it's not a bad thing, and I agree with that. But it is very treatable, and people died of that because it wasn't managed properly. We can manage it much better, and plus, that is a one-time, one-off event of a very poorly managed, the worst managed project in history, with the power plant in Japan, Fukushima. The people that died there were a couple thousand, but it's because they evacuated a lot of nursing homes and put them basically in gymnasiums or stadiums where they didn't have the proper medical equipment for ventilation, and the people died. So there's about 2,000 people that died because of that, but it was the panic, it was a reaction to what could happen from the Fukushima plant. The Fukushima plant itself, the actual radiation that it caused, nobody died from the radiation from the Fukushima plant. There was one explosion that occurred from a hydrogen container, but that wasn't nuclear radiation. And that's where the scare is, the nuclear radiation killing people. So if that's the fear, then it's misplaced. We have to take a break. This is 560 AM, KBLU, Life, Death, and Law.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Ford wants to be your best choice for 2023. During our carryover sales event, you can take advantage of our remaining 2022 inventory of F-Series trucks and world-class SUVs like Expedition, Explorer, Edge, Escape, and EcoSport, with offers as low as 0.9% for up to 66 months on FlexBuy. Only off-road in an exciting Bronco or Bronco Sport, Mustang GT, and convertible could really make your new year exciting. Our remaining 2022 inventory has reduced in price to move quickly. Visit online at BillAlexanderFord.com today. Difference you can count on.
We have the world at our fingertips, inspiration in our touch, and power in our hands. Our hands, gentle enough to hold the next generation, yet strong enough to build movements that can change the world. Our hands can build relationships, frame ideas, and empower communities. We have the ability to share and imagine, create and comfort, love and heal the world around us. And it doesn't stop there. Right here, in our hands, we have the power to save a life. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest. The power is in your hands. Anthem Foundation is the proud national supporter of the American Heart Association's Hands Only CPR campaign.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Go, text, and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is 560 AM, KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner in studio here with Adam Hanson. We're talking about global warming and climate change and carbon dioxide and nuclear radiation. So, Adam, you asked a two-part question. One was, what are people more afraid of? Is it that there's nuclear radiation that is going to be a result of more nuclear power plants and people die because of that, or is it the byproduct will be nuclear weapons and therefore more nuclear proliferation throughout other countries and more access to a material that is available to create weapons of mass destruction? Off-the-cuff answer to that is currently it only takes about enrichment to 4% of uranium to make it radioactive enough to produce heat that generates the steam to turn a turbine for electricity, 4% for a nuclear power plant. And it takes uranium enriched to about 80 to 90% to create a nuclear weapon. There's a huge difference between 4% and 80 and 90%. And so if we're concerned about uranium being enriched to become a nuclear weapon, well, if the enrichment is available and they can do that, then we can actually identify that very clearly. And in fact, Iran is doing that. And we're over there right now with the Biden administration trying to negotiate with Iran not to continue to enrich their uranium. We know that the Obama administration had the Iran nuclear deal where they said, okay, fine, you can do power plants for nuclear. We're okay with you doing power plants for nuclear, but just please don't enrich it to the point where you can use it for nuclear weapons, because you've said very straightforward that you're going to use those nuclear weapons to take out and wipe Israel off the map, and you'll use them for a lot of other nefarious objectives that we don't agree with. And Iran says, fine, we won't do that. Well, right now, they're at about 60% enrichment, which is 54% more, 56% more than they need to create nuclear energy. So they're certainly not just stopping at the nuclear energy aspect of their nuclear ambitions. They want to create a nuclear weapon, and so they lied. Is anybody surprised about that? I think if there was anybody that was surprised about that, that person needs to be put in the town square with a dunce hat, right? Because obviously they have their own ambitions. And so we've got this situation, and nonetheless, even though they lied and are continuing to move forward with this preparation to create a nuclear weapon, the Biden administration is out there, and Trump, we know, went in and said, no, there's no more Iran nuclear deal. We're not going to relieve the sanctions on Iran because Iran is a terrorist country and we're going to treat it as such. And Biden goes in there and says, no, we'll re-up the Iran nuclear deal, and we'll also lift the restrictions if Iran will provide us with some oil and use their voice at OPEC to produce more oil so we can have a greater production of oil outside the United States and hopefully reduce oil prices, hopefully by prior to the elections in November 2022. And so his administration would look like they were doing a good job. And OPEC said, no, we're not going to increase oil production, and no, we're not going to decrease our enrichment of uranium. And so they said no on both points and said, okay, well, I'll go back to Washington and we'll say it was a good talk. So that's where you're at. So I guess the answer is, if countries are dead set on enriching uranium and creating a bomb, there are other ways to stop them from doing it. And I think military intervention is really the only way to do it. If they really want to create a nuclear weapon, then we can go in like Iraq and we can neutralize that situation. Now, whether or not we occupy the country for a long period of time like we did Iraq, that's something that is a discussion for another day. I don't think we should, but that's another discussion. But North Korea, you know, they're obviously a nuclear power, and they have no good intentions, and we're apparently okay with that. So I don't understand why the rest of the world can't focus more on a very clean, efficient source of energy, because we don't want other countries getting access to nuclear enrichment technology. And that cat's out of the bag. People know how to do it. You can learn how to do it on YouTube. Whether or not we allow the resources to be coupled together in these hostile governments is a question for the military. It's not a question anymore for diplomatic discussion, and it's certainly not a question for energy policy.
And the drive for clean power, with air quotes, clean power, in other words, or limiting our carbon emissions, is going back to your original questions, Adam, what do you think? You ask me, Adam, what do you think about when you hear carbon, the word carbon or carbon emissions? And I responded, well, as a layperson, I would say that's bad. It's really bad because that's what we've been taught and that's what's been promulgated. But in reality, I mean, if you look at some of these prominent scientists in the field of carbon and creating CO2-based lasers and things like that who really know the attributes of carbon, they're the ones saying we need more carbon. We need the more carbon in our atmosphere would be actually beneficial for the Earth. And you brought this up at the very beginning of the show, Sean, that when we use the word greenhouse gas, why is that a bad thing? Greenhouses
are good things.
Are great things. I mean, you can control the climate, and the warmer the better, and the more carbon that's in there in those particular greenhouses, the plants actually thrive. They need it. They want it. And if you were to inject more of it into the atmosphere, then our plants would actually grow faster and stronger, become more drought resistant, because carbon is a good thing, carbon dioxide. They need water, sunlight, and carbon dioxide. And those three things will make a plant thrive. And if plants are thriving, then we're going to thrive because they put off more oxygen. And hopefully we'll turn our particular area geographically into a microclimate. I mean, that's the potential here. We've seen that done over in Australia. We've seen it done in certain parts of Africa, in Kenya, for example, where people have set out to plant thousands of trees in their desert landscape, inject some water. If they can find water, and that's really the key there, if they can find enough water to keep these trees growing to maturity, then they've actually changed the landscape of their what once was a desert landscape or a wasteland. And that brings in rain clouds because of the moisture, which dumps more rain. It just thrives. It becomes a microclimate. And that's kind of what you're working on yourself, huh, Sean?
Yeah, so, you know, we've got this little 10-acre dilapidated lemon orchard. And what we want to do is we want to participate in, it's called permaculture. And the idea is that everything has a function and it enriches the entire environment and the animal life, the plant life, and the atmosphere together in unison. And so it seems like more and more the environmentalist argument out there is that humans are 100% the problem, when in reality, if you leave out human intervention in a lot of situations, what you have is desolation. In fact, just look at the community that we're in. If we didn't have human intervention, we wouldn't have all these beautiful crops that are growing. We wouldn't have all the animals that are sustained. We wouldn't have the economy, and we wouldn't be able to provide for families as well as the animal life that is thriving in this valley because of the canals that we've created and because of the dams that we've put in with the Colorado River. All that water would be rushing through, carving, you know, deeper and deeper canyons, and that's about it as it makes its way to the ocean in the Gulf of California. And why not use it and to make the desert bloom like a rose? And so that's what I would like to do. I would like to put into practice what I'm actually talking about and have animals where they're eating the grass on the lemon orchard that's already there, and then they have natural fertilizer with their urine and their feces, and that's creating better grass growing conditions, and the water that's used is less because the soil is richer, it's more carbon dense, it's pulling carbon out of the atmosphere. Now whether that's good or bad thing is another debate, but it is doing that because highly rich carbon dense soil produces more plants, and the more plants produces healthier animals, and then I can use those animals for self-sufficiency in case the grocery stores have a break in the supply chain, then I can rely on my own farm animals to do that. And I'm a big advocate for life in general. Human life, animal life, plant life, all life on Earth. I think that's what the Earth was created for, particularly human life, because I am a Christian and I believe that the Earth was created for mankind. but all animals and plants were placed in the stewardship of man, and we have an obligation to use that very wisely and not waste it. And so I want to actually do and implement the policies that I preach. I wonder if everybody, especially the socialists and the environmentalists, the loudest voices out there for those policies, would practice the same thing if they would be as convinced about their policies. Because we've got John Kerry, he's out there and he's flying around in his jet, and his carbon footprint individually is 100,000 times larger than any other person. Why don't you live what you're preaching? Stop wearing clothes that are byproducts, petroleum byproducts. Stop driving in cars and flying in jets that use gas and jet fuel. Stop doing those things that you are preaching are so bad and the rest of us should stop doing. Stop. If you want the industry to stop producing the product, then stop using the product. Put a boycott on the product. Let's have your whole movement put a boycott individually on a product that you think should not exist anymore and see how well it works for you. I think the same could be said for their socialistic ideas. If you like socialism and you want to give to the poor, give to the poor. Nobody's stopping you from giving to the poor and seeing how well that will cycle back up through the chain. But don't force the rest of us to do what you want, and then you live your life however you see fit. And that's the problem with all these big advocates, both on the environmentalist side and on the government side, is they want to preach to us that we should do and change our actions, but they shouldn't apply to themselves first. We all know that actions speak louder than words, and true leaders lead by example. Do what you're preaching. If it works, show us that you're happier and you're more productive or you have a more fulfilled life. But if you can't show us that, then stop telling us and guilting us into changing our actions, because in the end, your words fall flat and truth comes out, just like it has with COVID and every other scare that they put out there.
Absolutely. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We've got another one coming up next Monday. Before we go, we just want to remind you that are listening that we've got upcoming seminars this coming week on the 12th. That's a Thursday at the Yuma Main Library at 10:30 in the morning. If you can't make it to that one, then we invite you out to the Foothills Library on February 13th. That's Friday the 13th. It's your lucky day. Come see us at 10:30 out at the Yuma Foothills Library, and we'll be doing another seminar out there. We have great luck with these and a great time last month when we did this. There was a great turnout. So come on out and see what your options are when it comes to legally planning for your family and what we can do for you. And again, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next Monday.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, we are there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community, and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.